drop it down. Let me see your chest. Get low, scrub the ground. Let me see your chest. Push it up, push it up. Let me see your chest. Wobble, wobble, shake, shake it, shake it in the air. Wobble, wobble, chest, push it in the air. Show me what you got, show me what you got in the air. Show me what you got, show me what you got in the air.
Hey, big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up.
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute now. Wait a minute.
Baby wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble,
yeah.
Wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble,
yeah.
Wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble,
yeah.
Wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble, baby wobble,
yeah. Get it now. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Hey, big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up. Hey, big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up. Hey, big girl, make a bag it up.
Yeah.
Make a bag it up.
Goodbye, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show and see you next time on Squarkles.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer-powered community platform, which means we are funded by you, the listener. This morning, Jeff Gotzel joins us to discuss, on this Halloween day, Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein.
Told his tale. And I will tell you mine. I remember pieces. Of different men. And I saw it. Your name. Victor Frankenstein.
So here we are once again with our beloved co-counsel, Jeff Gotzel, and he's had a pretty busy week, but he managed to squeeze in Frankenstein, the Guillermo del Toro version, which is one of the more highly anticipated movies of the season, just in time for Halloween, as is this show, I hope, this episode, and he's going to share his thoughts on the film. I just want to make a preliminary comment. One, it seems to be a much more faithful adaptation of the source novel and a little bit more in line with an aspect of the book that nobody seems to remember, which is that Mary Shelley was one of those 19th century writers that disliked the Enlightenment, didn't like science. And so there's the hubris in the novel is based on that. It falls in and out of some of the movies made over the course of numerous decades.
Yeah.
It seems like Del Toro's approach is also ambivalent about science.
Yeah, I think you are on to something there. And like so many of the aspects of this film, it's both true and not all that true.
Oh,
it's
yes.
Such a rich source that was available for him to dive into.
Mm-hmm.
And right from the start, we can say that from my understanding, I did not actually read the entire book, but I read the comic book. And you think that's, I'm kidding, but the Classics Illustrated series of books is as faithful as you can get. Those comic books are dead on, and I remember those vividly.
Oh,
so
me
I
too.
Can actually speak to the original novel. And I think that for sure, both are at play here.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the most faithful version. Apparently, the Kenneth Branagh film still owns that with dinner page for page, but even that is not perfect. And that was based on a Frank Darabont screenplay, which Del Toro admired greatly, and in fact was going to use originally when he first had the idea 100 years ago to do this. One of his favorite projects of all time. Lots of things changed along the way, including Andrew Garfield originally being cast as the creature, all the way up to the point where they had models made and everything after his body. And then when he no longer could do it, the actor Jacob Elordi, jumped in, and look out, he's going to get possibly even nomination for this. A lot of the attention of the critical attention is favorable is on him, but there's so many ways to approach this. I like that we're starting with comparisons to the original novel, however, because I was looking for where he is going to deviate and and where he might embellish, which he did. All of which I'll say, first of all, was done successfully. I love this film. It's been about 24 hours now since I saw it. I went to an 11:45 a.m. matinee at our beloved Baghdad Theater here in Portland. And if it weren't for that 18-inning World Series game, I would have been thinking of nothing else in the last 24 hours. I will be going to see it again. And right off the bat, see it on a big screen you can. The temptation to see it on Netflix will be great, though, because it's financed by Netflix. So naturally, it's going to be streaming in 2 weeks.
Right.
So there you go. But all $120 million of the budget is on the screen, as you would expect from a Del Toro production. That's the very least that you can expect from it. Stunningly beautiful film.
Yes.
Production design, costume design. If Wicked for Good wins the Oscar over this, I will be furious, which would probably happen. Everything away from the first one, took everything away from Nosferatu.
Oh, I know.
Which were both nominated, so there you go.
It's curious. You can see certain thematic resemblances between this movie and some of his other recent ones. In fact, there's a bit of Tim Burton in Del Toro, in that he seems to favor protagonists who are emotional or emo-ish or disparaged by the community in which they don't fit.
Outcasts.
And I'm thinking an immediate predecessor to that would be The Shape of Water, where you have this sad creature being, again, sized up for experiments. And were it not for the love of a good woman in that movie, he would not been able to escape to the sea, not to spoil the ending. But on the other hand, here's a creature being built from scratch by a super arrogant Herr Dr. Frankenstein.
Egotistical, full of hubris, doesn't care that he's being kicked out of the university for his experiments. Mm-hmm. And even the tribunal, the disciplinary tribunal in the film, where he knows he's not going to win them over, he uses the opportunity to put it in their face, kind of thing.
Yeah.
He is clearly, from all the versions I've seen, showing that aspect of his personality. Yeah. He is by no means the hero of this story.
It's definitely the monster.
I wouldn't even call him a monster.
I know.
A creature. I think it says on the on the titles, because clearly Victor Frankenstein's actions are far more monstrous than
right. And you know, the part that's always left out of the movies is all of the sections having to do with the Arctic. I don't know if it's the North or the South Pole. I think it's the North Pole. And they could just dive right in and create this little world within the world. And it's really quite striking how visually stunning it is and how he is able to balance the brutality of the other people with this inherent sympathy of Frankenstein, of the monster, of the creature, who comes up out of nowhere and he's kind of like the Hulk. He's not a monster. He's just a misunderstood alienated person who's, as in the novel, has set himself through the task of getting, you know, he's getting revenge on his creator.
And he very much goes through an evolution of I was going to say manhood or personhood himself, humanity, to arrive at that point. He didn't just wake up and say, "What the hell? I'm going after whoever did this to me."
Isn't there a whole section where he becomes, the creature becomes a benefactor of this family, and then they turn on him?
Yes. Well, it is actually kind of an extrapolation of the famous scene that was first shown in The Bride of Frankenstein with the blind man who teaches him how to, and there is a blind man there, and this comes from the novel as well. It's an elaboration on that. The blind man, I don't want to give away too much, but is the one who's left in this house village. They've all left to go hunt some wolves. Mm-hmm. Long story short, and so he has this relationship with him, and then when they come back, they don't understand, and that's where things kind of go south and all of that. But that's beautifully done too. Wow. And I will say that there are all kinds of places, if you want to be that type, that would say, "Oh, that's that strains credibility." I would only remind anyone, and I found that myself, mm-hmm. you are already accepting a story. The guy puts together parts and creates it. You realize that, right? So there's little things along the way that say, "I don't think he would do that." I didn't bother me, let's put it that way. But they are there. Del Toro gives himself certain license, and he deserves it to do that. It's stunning, and I love what the emphasis that Del Toro, who wrote the screenplay, by the way, as well. Uses a lot of the dialogue for me, even though the sound system's great at the Baghdad Theater, was a little hard to pick up. It's crucial. So mention to anyone, pay attention if you can, especially in the dialogue between the character played by Mia Goth, Elizabeth, Henry Frankenstein's fiance, and Victor Frankenstein, played by Oscar Isaac. A lot of the philosophical discussions they have are very interesting and kind of crucial, but a little hard to pick up.
Yeah, and it's also where the anti enlightenment material probably pops up.
You're right. This is true. This is where she represents a certain way of thinking. Mm-hmm. I think that he, by his very actions, is either opposing or not taking into consideration. Mm-hmm. and all of that. There's so many areas we can go into.
It's a pretty long movie. It's 2.5 hours long, but
it is.
I would wager that you didn't mind that at all.
Correct. Well, I did not. But I maybe halfway through was wondering if I would. Mm-hmm. But what got me back in again is the acceptance of the way the story was structured. And I can say that basically it's kind of in two parts with a prelude. And it's the first section is a prelude, which is basically Victor Frankenstein's childhood and the creation of the motivations he will have to create the creature. The main two pieces are Frankenstein's story and the creature's story. Mm. And once you realize that, and Frankenstein gets to tell his story first, you realize, well, that took a long time. We're only an hour and a half into it. But you really want to hear the creature's story as well. So that's what right away said, okay, take your time. I'm in it. If you're not, then it'll be too long for you. But I don't see any fat on this, any place I would cut it. I had no problem with the length.
And if you don't have any patience for philosophical or scientific discussions, that might pull you up maybe tax somebody's patience, but I don't want to turn people away from the movie. I think these are probably really interesting discussions. And
like I say, they're not long-winded. If you miss them, you'll miss them. It's they're said once. They're pretty much over dinner or something while other things are going on, and you could easily, like I said, if you didn't catch that dialogue, you might not really get it at all. So they don't belabor the point.
Yeah, and he's attracted to an examination of from the devil's backbone onward, fascistic characters within the, not scientists, but just, but anyway, in the movie, I think it's Charles Dance plays his dad, and he's a complete dictator.
Yeah, he is old guard, conservative, yes, close-minded, a-hole.
But the apple doesn't seem to fall far from the tree as time goes by, and that's because I think the Victor's mother dies. Not to spoil it, but I mean,
it's motivation for his.
That's a huge motivating factor in
to conquer death, to prove death is not the last word.
Right. Yeah. So, but the set design, costumery, and so forth looks fantastic. Yeah. I'm sure it is, but I think he's underrated as a director of actors. I think that
in this case, 100%.
You know, I look back on Nightmare Alley, and I think, boy, he got some pretty good performances out of expert thespians such as Cate Blanchett and Bradley Cooper, but even down into the minor characters, where he has a lot of more latitude for physical embodiments of people, the way that Fellini would often have, you know, extreme appearances and odd people. So you've got quite a not a cacophony, but you've got quite a variety of interesting looking actors in this movie, according to the IMDb page.
Yeah, they are. They're without any hair and makeup and everything, they're quite individual, these people. I know. I mean, we know from just hearing Del Toro talk and everything that the atmosphere on set must be very congenial and cooperative. And so I believe it's safe to say that he respects the actors' choices, unless they're off completely. But
yeah,
they're already invested in a Del Toro picture once you've signed onto it, and you're halfway there to get what they all want to accomplish. I know, by the way, that he has said that Shape of Water, Pan's Labyrinth, and this are the three films that will never leave his head. They are the ones that he will calls his personal legacy.
Well, so, Pan's Labyrinth has such incredible Jodorowskian image, you know, like hands in the eyeballs.
Yeah,
and
I know what you mean by that. Yeah,
and people were, as the kids say, blown away by the movie when it first came out. As I overheard people saying while leaving the Cinema 21 when I saw Pan's Labyrinth. But I think it's interesting to contemplate some of his other influences, because you know everybody. He's one of the people who didn't want to do a remake of King Kong, unlike Peter Jackson and numerous other. But here he is. But he has picked Stake to Claim on one of the most notable of the great horror films, most famously James Whale's adaptation, which was in itself fairly accurate to the book. But and James Whale is also a really scenic person with, you know, great shots of the outside world and the lab where the monster is made.
All the more reason why you kind of wonder why didn't they take advantage of having the whole Frozen North included just for visual candy that they could have used in the early. But I think they wanted to keep the story simple. Okay. They didn't have the budget, maybe.
To do it. The 30s people, let's just keep this around 80 or 90 minutes, shall we?
For sure.
So we can squeeze in a couple of more shows 70, today.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, I think another influence on him that is a little recognized is Alfred Hitchcock, because a lot of his movies have that the one shot in Australia, set in Australia, with Ingrid Bergman.
Under Capricorn?
Yes, Under Capricorn. There's a Rebecca. There's a lot of old dark house stuff, such as in Crimson Peak, I think is the title, and various other of his works. And I think that, you know, he wrote a book about Frankenstein. He wrote a book about Alfred Hitchcock. Not same diff.
Yeah.
It's only in Spanish, though. It has yet to be translated into English. And I would love to be able to read it and see what it, not just what it says about Hitchcock, but what it says about Del Toro. Because there's got to be a lot of information, you know, especially his attitude towards fathers and authority figures.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, that I'm sure does not go unapproached, that issue.
So, any concluding thoughts?
Well, like as I see it in the theater, just for the richness of it, of course, I am gratified to find that since I saw it, I have been contacted and contacted some of my cinephile friends who love it as well. And I was really gratified to hear that. And actually moved by it. I have to tell you, I don't mind saying that I was brought to tears at the end of it. That much does the impact of what I would consider the main story here have on those who have dialed in by then. You're already out. But for those of us, and I was gratified to find that I'm not the only one who was on board for the ride. You won't be disappointed.
That's fantastic. Well, we've been talking to Jeff Godsell and going over in great detail Guillermo del Toro's new adaptation of Frankenstein. And we'll have you back on again very quickly to talk about some other recent films. It's been a pretty rich moment. All these directors of the recent past, like Luca Guadagnini and P.T. Anderson and Avi Astor and others, have just all of a sudden, a bunch of their movies have come out at once. So it'd be great to get caught up on some of them.
Yeah,
and the other new ones are coming up, although probably not Wicked for Good.
It's been,
I never even saw the first
one. It's been quite a year. It's indeed been quite a year.
Okay. Well, it's great talking to you as usual. And we'll run into you again soon, either in person or on the radio. Yes, there we go. Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Terrific.
All right. And recording. Wait, where do I do that? Down here.
Somewhere there. Something probably has a... I don't know.
Oh. Oops. Where'd you go?
There's nothing to fear. Nope. No blood, no decay. Just a few stitches. Crazy am I? We'll see whether I'm crazy or not. Come on up. That body is not dead. It has never lived. I created it. I made it with my own hands from the bodies I took from graves, from the gallows, anywhere. Dead? Eh? Quite a good scene, isn't it?
One man crazy, three very sane spectators.
Do you know who Henry Frankenstein is and who you are?
Yes, I know. Made me from dead. I love dead. Hate living.
You're wise in your generation. We must have a long talk, and then I have an important call to make.
Oh, Frederick.
This is the moment. Well, dear, are you ready?
Yes, Doctor.
Elevate me.
Now? Right here?
Yes, yes. Raise the platform.
Oh, the platform. Oh, that. Yeah, yes.
From that fateful day when stinking bits of slime first crawled from the sea and shouted to the cold stars, I am man. Our greatest dread has always been the knowledge of our own mortality. But tonight, we shall hurl the gauntlet of science into the frightful face of death itself. Tonight, we shall ascend into the heavens. We shall mock the earthquake. We shall command the thunders and penetrate into the very womb of impervious nature herself.
When I give the word, throw the first switch.
You've got it, Master.
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say! Throw it! Flies! Flies, do you hear me? Give my creation! Flies!
It is good for you. Your father was Frankenstein, and your mother was the lightning. She has come down to you again. We will go to Ludwig, the second son of Frankenstein. He has all the secrets of his father who created you. We will force him to harness the lightning for you. He will give you strength of 100 men. Come, we're going to find Dr. Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Have an old car taking up space? Donate it to KBOO. Your unused vehicle can become music to our ears, powering independent